Hollywood strike averted. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. The film and TV industry has avoided what could have been a costly and damaging strike. Over the weekend, studios and the union representing production crew members reached a deal. Without one, crews would have walked off sets today, just as Hollywood is recovering from COVID shutdowns. Marketplace's Nova Sappho is here with more. Good morning, Nova.
Good morning, Sabri.
So there were a lot of issues at stake here. There's a lot of talk about long working hours that people wanted to change. Do we know what's in the deal struck over the weekend?
Well, we don't have the specifics. Union members still have to vote to approve the deal, but it looks like from preliminary statements that the union, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, believes it got a lot of what it was asking for. The strike has been called off. We asked Kate Fortmuller of the University of Georgia, who studies media labor issues, to analyze what we know about the deal so far.
It looks like they got a lot of concessions in terms of turnaround times and meal breaks and increases in wages, things that they were looking for. So in that respect, they made some progress.
Yeah, in a statement, the union said much of the same thing, highlighting, among other things, what it said were significant increases in compensation for productions by streaming companies.
Why were streaming companies being singled out here?
Okay, so that was an issue because streaming companies have become powerful studios, right? They're not just distributors of content. But the payment provisions they operate under, some were written over a decade ago. So streaming companies have been paying less into crew members' benefit and pension plans, for instance. Some operate under lower pay scales. And union members just don't think that's fair, considering the companies we're talking about are the likes of Apple. So that's a change they were looking for, and the union says they got some concessions on that front.
All right. Marketplace's Nova Sappho, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's looking increasingly likely that higher-than-expected inflation will continue to linger in the U.S. economy. The Wall Street Journal surveyed economists and found they expect inflation to still be at 5.25% in December. That's just slightly below where it is now at 5.4%. The question is, how are firms dealing with this and other challenges coming their way? As firms report earnings, we are finding out. Julia Coronado is founder of Macro Policy Perspectives and joins us to talk about it. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
Why increasingly do people seem to be saying the inflation situation is going to be kind of bad for maybe another year?
Well, we've seen supply chain bottlenecks get further exacerbated by the Delta variant, and so that's going to be slow to improve. And now we've added on a layer of global energy concerns and price spikes that could hurt demand during the winter months. So none of this looks like it's heading towards a quick resolution.
Mm. At the same time as we have this situation, we also have a slowing economy in China. We are seeing how U.S. companies are coping because it's earnings season. So we're sort of seeing under the hood there. How are they doing?
Well, so far, companies have been continuing to beat expectations. And what we've seen throughout the pandemic is that companies have dealt with all of these challenges from supply chains and inflation pops and labor market frictions surprisingly well. They've been resilient and innovative and productive despite all of these challenges. When companies start to see material roadblocks, they usually give some warnings about that. So we'll be looking for those kinds of warnings, even if they did pretty well in the third quarter. What are they guiding us to expect in the next quarter and in the year ahead?
Are we getting any of those warnings so far?
Not really. So far, it's early. We've gotten mostly financials, and they handily beat expectations and showed a really robust backdrop for their business. Now we're going to get some more consumer companies this week. So we'll be looking very carefully at how the consumer, we've seen consumer sentiment dip recently, but sometimes consumers report that they're not feeling so great, but they keep right on shopping. And we saw that in the retail sales figures last week. So we'll see what companies are seeing on the ground.
All right. We'll see. Julia Coronado, founder and president of Macro Policy Perspectives. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Big cities are expensive to live in, and this is not just a problem in San Francisco and New York. It's an issue globally. Berlin could be heading for a fairly radical solution. Voters there recently approved a plan that, if it goes on to become law, would allow the city to seize properties owned by large commercial landlords. The BBC's Mike Johnson reports.
So here's my apartment. I live in the north of Berlin.
Joanna Kuszak has lived in Berlin for 14 years. Originally from Poland, she's now a German citizen. She believes her adopted city has become unaffordable.
Around 15 years ago, after a lot of housing was privatized to financialized companies, to hedge funds, to companies operating on the financial markets, all of a sudden rents started rising very aggressively. In some parts of the cities, the rent would have quadrupled in the last 10 years.
Joanna helped organize the recent referendum where she and more than a million other Berliners said yes to the idea of the city authorities taking control of properties owned by large-scale private landlords, with compensation to be decided.
The root of this problem is that housing is being used to speculate on the financial market. In Germany, we even have a word for it. It's called Beton Gold, concrete gold. Housing is being turned into concrete gold. The big difference is gold is not a basic need of a human being, and housing is.
The referendum result isn't legally binding, but if it does become law, almost a quarter of a million Berlin homes would pass from private to public control.
Welcome to Heimstaden. We make room for everybody.
A promotional video for one of the biggest property investment businesses in Europe. Heimstaden is a Swedish company which owns 20,000 apartments in Berlin. They'd all have to be handed over to the city authorities. Heimstaden's chief investment officer is Christian Floland.
We don't believe it will address their true problem, which is a housing shortage in Berlin. This would not add any single home to the Berliner.
Someone else who doesn't believe seizing privately owned housing is a good idea is Professor Edward Glaser, who specializes in the economics of urban spaces at Harvard University.
It is critical that we have incentives to build. And taking away private property tells anyone who would build large amounts of urban space, there's a reasonable chance that we'll take your building after you've made it. That's a surefire recipe to make sure that no one builds again.
The Berlin Senate, the city-state's governing body, must now decide if the referendum result should become law. Berliners have spoken, but will the politicians act on what they've said? I'm the BBC's Mike Johnson for Marketplace.
One of Apple's partners for making iPhones is getting into the electric vehicle business in a big way. Earlier today, the Taiwanese company Foxconn unveiled its first three electric vehicles. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
Foxconn is mostly known for assembling iPhones for Apple. Now it'll put together electric cars for various automakers. Today, Foxconn unveiled an electric sedan, an SUV, plus an electric bus. The SUV will be sold under a Taiwanese car company's brand. It's scheduled to hit the Taiwanese market in 2023. The bus is set to start running in several cities in southern Taiwan next year. Foxconn is also discussing a deal to make vehicles for the EV startup Fisker. And earlier this fall, it announced it would take over production of electric pickup trucks for another EV startup, Lordstown Motors. Foxconn says it's going to buy Lordstown's Ohio factory. Foxconn's goal is to supply parts or services for 10% of all EVs worldwide by as early as 2025. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.